Listeners, welcome to today's broadcast on regulatory analytics. We're joined by my colleague Rahul Chowdhury, who's Director of Risk at Broadstone. Rahul, could you start by giving us a brief overview of the current landscape in regulatory analytics?
Thanks, Simon. It's great to be here. So within the regulatory world, the landscape is always changing with new updates coming in more frequently than ever before. And some of the areas within the regulatory analytics that we focus on and are absolutely critical for firms includes IFRS 9, IRB, model risk management, and climate risk. And these are the areas which are essential because they feed into financial and regulatory reporting, making it vital for financial institutions to navigate them effectively and staying updated and adapting to these changes is crucial for both maintaining compliance and managing risk.
Thanks, Rahul. And can you talk us through why, I mean, you've mentioned a couple of reasons there why regulatory analytics are important for financial institutions, but what else do they need to take into account?
So, I mean, the obvious ones are if banks and billing societies get it wrong, there are regulatory fines that can impose and their reputation at the back of that. And from reflecting on some of the recent fines which have been issued by the regulators, some of them have gone 50 million plus, which is a huge cost if you get it wrong. And given these regulations have been evolving for last 20, 30 years or so, and given the number of changes, number of guidance that are coming at the back of that from the regulator is very important. So it's very important for the firms to stay on top of the regs that are coming in, make sure they interpret it right, they implement it in a way which sort of reflects the right assessment of risk. And combination of all of that, it's a decent amount of work that firms need to go through every time any new update comes through. The biggest ones, if you get it wrong, regulatory fines and the repercussions of the reputation.
Yeah, very frightening indeed. You mentioned some of the key areas earlier, Rahul, and one was IFRS 9, which I've got to say is a new one on me. Can you give us a sort of high level overview of what IFRS 9 is and why it's important?
Yeah, so IFRS 9 is an accounting standard, like I said, feeds into financial reporting, which is publicly disclosed. And IFRS 9 is a standard that helps you estimate the provisions, or what we call as impairment. And the standard sets up all the guidelines, the requirements that the banks needs to do in order to estimate the expected credit losses, what we call it, what they're holding on their books across the retail, wholesale, and private banking. And just to give you a background on the journey, so before IFRS 9, we did have another regulation, which was called IAS 39. And given some of the issues which were observed, some of the themes that came at the back of the global financial crisis back in 2008, IFRS 9 was a natural evolution from that IAS 39, because some of the issues that we had before was the loan loss recognition was delayed at times. So the new regulation makes it forward-looking. It captures all the current information, all the risk that the bank is carrying on the books. So it was a massive enhancement compared to the previous regulation. And it went live in 2018. So it's been almost 6 years it's been live, and as you would know, we have had some of the models actually the banks have are pretty old. This sort of presents its own challenges, and a lot of the things around the COVID period didn't help, because one of the important component of the whole ECL framework is macroeconomic modeling. And as you would know, all the with the COVID, the government intervention, the macroeconomic modeling was very challenging to predict. And recently, there have been a lot of other updates as well, like the vulnerability of the customer, affordability in the light of the increase
in interest rates that we have seen, which puts a lot of pressure on the customer. So looking at the economic conditions and whatever is happening and bringing that into the framework involves a lot of deployment and reevaluating what you're carrying on the books.
That's interesting. And the fact that it's been there for, 7 years, 8 years, something like that, there must have been some updates or recent challenges that you've seen, Raul?
Yes. So the way IFRS 9 standard works, the financial reporting is actually audited by external auditors. So there's a good amount of scrutiny on these standards and the approaches that the banks hold. And at the same time, the regulator, the likes of FRC and PRA as well, tend to publish a lot of guidance based on, because I mean, we are in the world where we are always evolving, we are always learning from the previous challenges we have had, to make sure that we reflect on that and incorporate into what we do. So there is a lot of guidance that comes from the regulator who provides their views on what their expectations are on some of the key thematic areas. And from last 4 to 5 years, PRA every year publishes what they say DSCO and mostly DSCFO letter, where they send a letter to all the banks and building societies and lay out their expectations of some of the areas they are finding challenging and what they expect the firms to do. And the most recent one that came out was in 2024, in September, the DSCFO letter, which highlighted number of areas within IFRS 9 and climate risk modeling as well, which is again another important one for the firms to navigate through. And like I said, some of the thematic areas were in the light of increase in interest rate, the affordability assessment should be done correctly. The vulnerability of the customer should be assessed and should be treated fairly, and all the modeling things that comes along with it. So there was a lot that keeps coming on.
And how do you think Raul or the financial institutions should tackle these challenges?
So I mean, from my experience of being in this industry for 15 years, the regulations that have come through are becoming more prescriptive than what it used to be in the past, but still there is always room for interpretation. So it is very important for the firm, whenever any new guidance or any regs related advice comes through, it is very important for the bank to make an assessment and do the interpretation of those and how they're going to incorporate that. So setting up that process of interpreting in the right way, laying out the process to make sure that they incorporate everything as expected is very important. And second is just keeping on top of all the regs and the number of things that keeps coming along. It's a lot. It's a lot for any firm, be it a big firm or a small firm, different challenges, but it's very difficult to stay on top of all the regs that comes along. And along with it, so even though we're going to discuss the model risk management area separately, but that's another very important area which sort of cuts across IFRS 9 and IRB as well. And having a good governance process in place just makes life much easier. Just make sure that everything flows through with minimal inaccuracies as possible.
That's interesting. Should we leave that behind for a moment and move on to the internal ratings-based capital approaches? Can you explain what it is, first of all, and why it's significant?
So similar to IFRS 9, so IRB it's not a financial standard. It's a regulatory standard, and all the capital requirements that banks needs to hold are driven at the back of the Basel, the IRB standardized approaches. Again, background on this. It's we are on the third or 3.5 version of Basel at the moment, and the first one came out back in 1988, and I'm pretty sure most of our listeners were not even born back then, or maybe were just in the nappies like myself. So I mean, 36 years, the first Basel one that had came out, which is more focused on the credit risk, the capital adequacy. And thereafter, we had a second round, which came out in 2004, which got implemented in UK in 2007, which again reflected on the learnings that we had on the first one. And as you would expect, after the financial crisis, there were more learnings for the regulators, which was cascaded to the banks in terms of what the regulators' expectations are. And then we had the Basel III reforms in combination of a lot of other regulatory guidance that came from EBA, ECB, which got adopted by PRA in a proportionate manner, using the discretion which fit the bill for the UK market. A lot of those got finalized in 2017, 2018. A lot of those are getting implemented at the moment. And more recently, you might have heard Basel 3.1, which is, again, providing more very important guidance around the output flows and a lot of the on some of the model output flows. So there's a lot of guidance that has come through in Basel 3.1. But as you can expect, there's a lot of burden on the banks to implement all the regs that are coming through. And initially, the Basel 3.1 implementation was going to be this year, but that's been delayed now. It's going to be January 2026 now. And it just came out last Friday. It's very, very topical, very, very recent news that has come out. But all of that reflects there is a lot going on, and staying on top of it is very important.
No, absolutely. And yes, I did spot that in the press. I remember my days of being in a building society and talking about BAL, but I think that might have been one of the first or the second. Anyway, a while back. But talking as we were of IRB, how's that adapted since it's come in? And again, as we asked with the previous point, what sort of challenges are there?
So, I mean, one of the, I've been working with a lot of clients to help them navigate through all of these. And one of the very important basic challenge we tend to have is data. I mean, data is always an issue everywhere, but it becomes more apparent when it comes to IRB, because the way the capital requirements are, you have to account for the stress conditions, which means you need to go back to the downturn period, what we call the economic distress period, and the most recent one. I mean, we can call it COVID as well, but it didn't have the same effect as the 2008 one had. So it is expected that you're going to go back to 2008. You're going to get the data to do some of the modeling work. And for some portfolios, actually, for UK mortgages, which is using a hybrid approach, you actually have to go back to 90s. Because the fall in house prices and the increase in the default rate that was observed at that time was the highest. I mean, if we look at the UK finance data, for instance, which is publicly available, so there is a lot of data to be considered. You have to go back in the history, and if you don't have that, you need to have good extrapolation approaches to make sure that the outcome of the framework is right. So data continues to remain a big challenge. And second one, which sort of I reflected on before, is just the number of regs that keeps coming through. There's a lot to take on. So it is very important to stay on top of all of that. Making the right interpretation around it is very important, because we have seen from my experience in the past, the regs are more prescriptive now, but still it leaves some room for interpretation, which means it can go wrong if you do not focus and set it right. Because if you start wrong, you're going to end up wrong. So very important. And I continue to emphasize on the governance, the model risk management practice, because it is very, very important. And a lot of firms have got it wrong in the past. So it is very important to get it right, and some of the fines that we are seeing was actually coming in the back of the lack of robust governance processes in place.
Thanks for that, Rahul. We'll move on now to model risk management. Again, I'll ask the question, what is it and why is it important?
Yes, so model risk management, again, like other areas, it has evolved as well. And governance process, as you expect, has always been around. It's not a new thing. It is expected if banks are using models in some shape and form, which creates the model risk. And managing that model risk is very important, and having a good governance process really helps navigate through those challenges and making sure you have a robust outcome at the back of that. So more recently, we actually do not have any specific detailed regs on the model risk management before. But PRA came out with what it's called. It's called PRA SS 123, the supervisory statement. And it lays out very prescriptive. It lays out all the principles that the banks and building societies are supposed to follow or are expected to follow. It actually goes into much more detail where it has the sub principles, I think 30 plus within the five overall principles. So it's quite prescriptive. It gives you a good guidance of what is expected from the firms. But like I said, it's always been around. It was always expected the firms would be doing it. And very, very important topic. And one of the things that I've been talking to my clients about, or I get asked this question quite a lot. So the way this SS123 has been set up, it's expected the firms, those are using internal models, which is IRB pretty much for the capital requirement, then it is expected they would be implementing. The SS123 has actually already gone live in May 24. And like I said, the remit of that is to for the banks also use the internal models to implement that fully. But at the same time, I mean, even though the other firms are not bounded by it, but like I said, there is it covers very basic principles of governance and managing the model risk. So it is expected the firms would be doing something, would be implementing something related to on SS123, but on a proportionate basis rather than having a full implementation, looking at the operational needs of the bank and the risk they're carrying, the number of models they're carrying, it is expected they're going to be implementing something on a proportional basis as well.
Thanks, Raul. And I assume this is very similar to the other standards that are in place. It's regular monitoring, it's governance in place. Is that correct?
That's correct, yeah. One of the challenges that the firms are having at the moment is, I mean, because these are relatively new, all the principles and the sub-principles and how firms need to meet. And so setting up the process to make sure the interpretation of each of the principle and sub-principle has been set out right is very important. And again, there's a lot of room for interpretation, so getting that right is very important. And the second one is technology. It is expected for some of the areas like model inventory, for instance. If you have, say, 50 plus or 100 plus models in the bank, it is very hard to maintain that in Excel, for instance, with all the necessary fields you need to have, which needs constant constant upgrades that are required at the back of that. So it is expected that some tool or accelerator could be used to enhance that process around model inventory. So investing in technology is very important to enhance model risk management, because I mean, traditionally governance is considered as stakeholder meetings, review and challenge, and having some controls around it, but it's not just that anymore. It has moved on from that point, and now it's more driven by technology, more, and along with it, another thing that becomes very important is, because earlier the governance were mostly control testing driven, given the amount of model risk that comes through that which might not get picked up by the controls, it is very important to have sufficient skill set within the team. And generally, we have found it very useful if somebody who has been, for instance, involved in model development, model validation, doing the monitoring implementation, and being part of the committees, who understands the business very well, they're actually in a sweet spot to be part of the model risk management and drive along with the controls which already exist, having that and having an end-to-end view of the models and the implications that has on the provisions or the capital becomes very important, because they can identify the risk early and mitigate that as necessary. And the last point I'm going to make on that is just controls. I said, it was always control testing, but there have been gaps that have been identified there as well. So it is very important for the firms to continue to assess the controls they have in place to make sure there are no gaps. And if there are, then the roadmap of remediation is in place to make sure that nothing falls through the cracks.
Well, thanks, Rahul. It's important that they don't drop the ball on that. And something that may help them with that, perhaps, and something that our listeners may either be embracing or maybe slightly scared of, is artificial intelligence. Can you talk to us about how AI is impacting analytics and credit risk modeling, please?
Yeah, sure. So probably I'm going to split that AI part into one. I'll call it traditional AI, and then I'll call it Gen AI. The traditional AI, we have been using it for a number of years now, what we call machine learning. And it's quite a handy tool to have, or function to have to implement into modeling to make it more efficient, to see the trends which have not been historically identified. So it does have a lot of benefits that can be driven in the back of that. But at the same time, with any new technology, there comes challenges, and how you interpret the machine learning models compared to the traditional models is different. It's more complex. It's hard to explain. So having a very robust validation process is very important, and the things have evolved in the last few years. There is more literature on how to implement this correctly, what kind of governance process you need to have to make sure nothing falls through the cracks, because you might have seen that in the news that AI can go rogue very easily. So it's very important to have trust in AI and having the right model validation, having the right validation process of the AI tools, and having the right governance really helps. And then I'm going to briefly talk about Gen AI, because that everyone is talking about it. As you can expect, it's much more advanced, much more complex. Again, the similar things, it's just the focus on the interpretability and trust and the governance becomes even higher with Gen AI, because it's so advanced. It can very easily, I wouldn't say call it can go wrong, but it can make decisions which might not be aligned to the business needs and actually some of the regulatory requirements as well. For instance, if you do implement an acquisition at the time of origination, and if it's not making the decision which are not compliant with the standard regs and with the business expectation, it can have repercussions.
That's very interesting. So AI, both types, or one or the other, what are the challenges of getting AI involved in making sure that financial institutions can successfully monitor these processes, run these processes?
Yeah. So, like I said, so regs, the AI has evolved, has been evolving. If I look back, probably 5 years back, there wasn't much prescribed regs or guidelines from the regulator. But there's plenty of that coming through from the likes of EBA, and PRA is very active on that, been publishing a lot of guidelines how to use the machine learning and moving on to AI as well, and including the AI Act that came out in EBA. So there is a lot of guidance that is coming through to guide you how to navigate through safely in this environment. And the thought process is still evolving, not just for the regulators, but for the banks as well. And banks have started testing what we say POCs or the use cases within the bank. And within the IRB or IFRS 9 world, we have been testing it around through the end-to-end model lifecycle. Starting with the data, because we know that there are a lot of challenges with the data, and AI can really help to come up to help you make decisions on how to mitigate some of the risk that comes at the back of data limitations. And we have been using that for model validation as well, model monitoring, et cetera, sort of test the models of what's been developed by the development team to make sure that it fits the bill. But one of the challenges we are seeing specifically in the regulatory world within IRB, because the regulators' thoughts are evolving, they're testing a lot of things to make sure it's safe to be used within the bank. Now we haven't come to the point where it can be straight away used within the IRB or the regulatory world, but like I said, things are being tested in other places, like the data, in the scorecards, and within IFRS 9 as well, because AI does have very strong capability and can really help us identify the patterns which have not been in the past at a very, very minuscule amount of time compared to what we used to spend back in the day. Navigating through these is very important because it can be very complex and some things can go wrong without proper processes in place.
Absolutely. Really fascinating listening. I know AI, I'm certainly embracing it, but I'm finding that it struggles with common sense, I think, AI. And once it adapts to be able to do that, I think it's going to be a very, very effective tool, although it sounds as though it already is. Rahul, thank you for that. Before we wrap up, any final thoughts for our listeners?
Be proactive. There are a lot of regs coming in. Always stay on top of it. Do engage with the external SMEs. They have a lot of information or a lot of know-how of how the different banks are navigating through those challenges. So banks can leverage from the experience from the external SMEs. So do engage them when it's needed. And just enjoy. I tell my daughter always that this Basel one that I was talking about came out in 1988, which was 36 years ago. I'm pretty sure if my daughter gets into the same field, she'll be doing some generation of these as well. So just enjoy what you have. It's a difficult time given the amount of work that comes through, but it's exciting at the same time given the challenges and all the problem solving skills that we have, which comes to the forefront of all of this. So enjoy what you have, what you're doing. Keep on top of all the regs
Wonderful. Thank you, Rahul. And thank you for joining us and for your expertise there. Listeners, that was my colleague, Rahul Chaudhary, who's Director of Risk at Broadstone. Thank you very much for listening. You can subscribe to our broadcast. There will be further risk broadcasts coming down the line from Rahul and his colleagues. And there are other broadcasts from other parts of Broadstone too. But thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time.